Welcome to Career Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
Today's podcast, Horstman's Wager, part one of one.
This cast answers these questions. How do I play an interview to ensure I get an offer? What's the worst outcome of an interview? And how can I win in my interviews?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Got a great performance review and now you want to move into management? Being a top performer is just the beginning. The skills that make a great manager are different. At the Effective Manager Conference, you'll learn practical tools for one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, and delegation so you can succeed in your new role. Start strong and register today at manager-tools.com/EMC. Today, we are again on Career Tools recording one of those classic podcasts, one of those podcasts that we recorded originally nearly 20 years ago. And today's cast, Horstman's Wager, is about being interviewed.
Yeah.
I think, if I'm remembering correctly, and I'm not sure if you remember, the original impetus for this topic was a forum post conversation.
I did not recall that. No.
Yeah, I think somebody saw probably some popular media recommendation.
Oh, sure.
About interviewing, and you addressed it. So today, our cast, Horstman's Wager, is about interview preparation itself and the need for ethics and candor during this process.
Yeah. One of the tenets that makes us different is that we really believe in preparation.
And when you say us, you mean Manager Tools, us.
Yes, obviously. And most people don't understand interviewing. They don't understand. And legitimately, they don't. I mean, it's not their fault that they don't understand. It's nobody has ever explained it to them. It's like a black box. They see people go in that they shouldn't expect to get offers that do, and people that they're certain will get offers that don't. And the understanding of how you prepare, how you craft answers and so on is wildly misleading. Everyone's trying to make it easy. And in fact, you don't want to wish for it to be easy. You want to wish to be prepared. So we really spend a lot of time focusing on preparation. And once you do our preparation once using the interviewing series, which is available to licensees, obviously, things change enormously and you'll never worry about interviewing ever again. And the other side of the coin, the way the rest of the world sees interviewing is you have to learn how to play the game. You know, there's all kinds of guidance saying interviewing is a two-way street, which it's not. It's a one-way street, back to back. First goes the company and then goes you. And then there's another part saying, here's how to answer that question in a way that protects yourself and so on, which is wrong because interviewers are experienced usually, and they know that you don't know what you're doing and you're going to get it wrong. And so you have to be very careful about not giving an answer and fooling the interviewer into think that you've actually given an answer. It's kind of stupid. And those interviewees believe that the key to interviewing is to play the game. You have to play the game. You have to learn the inside tricks to answer the question in a way that's not really an answer, but that will fool the interviewer. And a lot of people will say, the key to this, the way to prepare is to learn about the company so you can be what the company wants you to be. That's the key. And that's wrong. It's stupid.
Exactly. So folks, in this cast, we're going to discuss what we call Horstman's Wager. And we're going to talk about why playing the game is a kiss of death when it comes to interviewing. Now, this is true of many of the things that we talk about, frankly. Most people want to know the secret. They want the magic move. They want the silver bullet. They want the key to riches, that easy one thing that they can do that unlocks this, to your point, black box that is interviewing. And as in every single other case, there is no something like that. There is no silver bullet, basically. When it comes to individuals who are searching for the silver bullet, they're really just trying to avoid the difficult, hard work of preparation. And thus, Horstman's Wager was born.
Yeah, because basically playing the game is not only lazy, but it's ineffective in the short and long run. If you're playing the game and somebody else isn't, they're going to beat you out, assuming they've prepared. Now, you may think going through life means avoiding preparation. Well, good luck with that. I suspect you choose your doctor by how much preparation they have, and you don't want somebody who's not prepared operating on you. And there are thousands of millions of let's let everybody just drive on the roads without any preparation. That'll be good, right? I talk to people all the time who say their competitive advantage is they're prepared for every meeting they go to. And then I talk to other people who say, no, I don't prepare for anything. I just go in there and I'm myself. I'm just being my authentic self. Our outline is really simple. We have two items, preparation and then the actual description of Horseman's Wager. In preparation, we're going to talk about a little bit of background about the black box that interviewing is, and also the idea that playing the interview game is a myth. It's a classic myth. You have to play the game. You have to be somebody you're not in order to get an offer and so on. It's just dumb. And then in Horseman's Wager, we're going to lay out the 2x2 matrix of Horseman's Wager, and we're going to talk about the four quadrants. And basically, it's about whether you get an offer or you don't, and whether you act as yourself or you don't.
Yeah. All right. So let's start with the preparation piece of it. And we started to dip our toe into this, if you will. But we're going to address first that concept that interviewing is a black box. And folks, this is the small kernel of truth that leads us as interviewees into this pit of despair when it comes to interviewing poorly in so many cases. In the purest sense, interviewing to us, the candidate, is a black box just because most people don't understand how to interview and how to interview well, and they don't get detailed information about what happens during the process, largely because companies don't have a repeatable system to get the proper candidate, the proper hire effectively, and because there's really no internal process for determining whether or not someone is a good hire. The candidates themselves see this disjointed series of choices made by organizations, and it leaves us having to figure out for ourselves why these decisions are being made and therefore attempting to game the system.
Yeah, and interviewing is not a black box, but if you take an unprepared person going into a company, an interview with a company they don't know much about and have not studied themselves to know what their strengths and weaknesses are, it's not surprising, though, that interviewees see interviewing as a black box. They go into a system and they want a certain outcome, and they often don't get it. The majority of interviews are not successful. That shouldn't be a surprise. And they think to themselves, well, I didn't really expect the questions I got, which you could have figured out had you been prepared. And when you think further, people think they know themselves, but in fact, they don't know themselves in the language that companies speak. And so they're basically unable to predict the outcome of an interview. It's not a black box. Interviewing is not a black box. If you'll listen to our interviewing series, which again is available to licensees, you'll discover it's not a black box. You'll be prepared for everything all the time. But if you're unprepared and you have been led to believe that you should try to game the system, it will seem like a black box to you because you'll do what you think is right and you won't get the answer you want. And after a while, that'll become very frustrating. Because again, you want to be able to predict the outcome. And what's interesting about that is because they haven't prepared and then they think it's a black box and they get weird outcomes out of it, they then go down the wrong path when it comes to preparation. You know, at some point people start saying, why bother? Why should I even try? It makes no sense to me. If I can't predict it, the less preparation is better, because hypothetically that would mean I could do more interviews. Right? Because I don't have to spend time preparing. If I can't figure out what's happening in there, how can I be sure that the hours I spend are worth it? If I'm great and I'm well prepared and I get a purely random, at least according to my understanding of the model, if I get a purely random no out of an interview, I mean, that puts the damper on my enthusiasm, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I think to our previous points, that rarely happens. And a great candidate, a well-prepared candidate is, I mean, they're a shoo-in. They're basically, because let's remember, candidates of the world, all of the other candidates are in your same position. So if you are highly prepared, if you know what you're trying to say and have prepared to say it well, you're the one that's going to stand out from the crowd.
Yeah. Okay. So that leads to our second point in preparation, which is playing the interview game is a classic myth. And if you think about it, it's really quite normal that this happens. When you don't understand a process, when the process that you're getting involved in is unknown to you, and rewards associated with it are significant, obviously offers or not offers, what ends up happening is myths about the process end up driving people's behavior.
Exactly. Like, for example, folks, if something is important to me, but I can't figure it out, I'm a lot less able to be sure of myself. I lack confidence. I start to doubt what I can do and how I can do it. And any creative solution I might come up with, particularly any labor-saving solution, like lack of preparation in this case, starts to look really good.
Yeah, exactly. It makes sense to you. In fact, in some ways, probably from your ego perspective, you're protecting yourself. But the problem with this, what's terrible about this systemically, is that all this myth-driven behavior of I don't have to prepare, I'm going to try to game the system, actually drives more uncertainty into the outcomes of interviewing, which people think of as a black box. And of course, that then increases the allure of latching on to any idea that might be of value. Take it from us, folks. We have watched, I've probably watched 100 YouTube videos about how to answer, tell me about yourself. Probably the first big question you get in the vast majority of interviews you go to, if you're being interviewed by a reasonably intelligent person, which is not easily predictable, to be honest. That, by the way, that's another thing that leads to the unpredictability of interviews, which is stupid, lousy interviewers. I mean, they're terrible. They ask questions like, what color would you be? You know, if you're an animal, what would you be?
What kind of tree would you be?
Yeah, or futuristic questions like, what would you do in this situation? Literally idiocy. But if you watch those YouTube videos, you'll discover that if you watch enough of them, they all disagree on what the right answer is, which is funny, which should give you an indication. They don't know what they're talking about. But the second thing you'll notice is that they're all very slickly produced, which should give you a sense about things. And the third thing that you'll notice is they're all 10 minutes and 1 second long. And the reason for that, folks, is because they don't care about you. They don't care about the interview. And frankly, they don't know what they're talking about when it comes to tell me about yourself. They just want their video to be 10 minutes and 1 second long because that's how long it takes on YouTube to get 3 advertisements on your video. They don't care about you. They care about the advertising money they're going to get. And they know that you think interviewing is a black box. And so therefore, you say, well, I can just talk for as long as I need to. Nobody needs 10 minutes to describe how to answer, tell me about yourself. You don't. Okay. And by the way, we have a podcast called How to Answer, Tell Me About Yourself. I think it's in our interviewing series. And the myth that is being supported here and strengthened, in fact, is that you don't need to prepare for interviewing, as long as you're willing to play the game. And it makes sense to a lot of people, in part because people are willing to do illogical things if they're in a system that they find unprofessional, unfair, misleading, which people do. And a lot of that comes from the fact that interviews are important to people, but nevertheless, that's what people think, and this is what people do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, we've been talking a lot about this playing the game idea. Now, let's talk a little bit about what it means to play the game, if you will. We all know at least one person that's done this or alluded to maybe even doing this. Playing the game is doing things like shading the truth, making something seem better than it was and puffing it up a little bit, making things sound better than they were. And a reporter might discover, later that that story that this candidate weaved together was mostly meringue. It was full of a lot of hot air, and there wasn't a lot of substance behind it. This idea of playing the game is basically playing in the gray area for many people, making clever omissions, being vague where we need to be, glossing things over, retelling a story in a way that makes someone look good, talking about things like being laid off versus being actually fired, or a short-term job, for example, that ended with a termination, being left off a resume because it was really only 3 months, grades that are rounded up a little bit too much, projects that are made to sound bigger because no one can actually prove that the impact wasn't really that big, pumping up one's involvement because the facts can't be checked on, claiming to be a leader when one was only a team member. And we've all seen it. Sometimes interviewers fall for these white lies. The vast majority of times, though, interviewers don't, because of Horstmann's third law. You're not that smart, and they are not that dumb.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to talking about interviewers, and I've done probably as much of that, if not more than the vast majority of people on the face of the earth, because I was a recruiter and then I helped companies hire people, tens of thousands of interviews over my career. And recruiters may not be getting a whole lot smarter. Actually, I think they are. Interviewers are not necessarily, people would think, oh, interviewers are still just interviewers. No, you get smarter as you learn how to interview. And you also get more cynical. And you learn the one key lesson as an interviewer, which is part of the interviewing series. And we certainly teach it at our Effective Hiring Manager conference, which is the purpose of an interview is find a reason to say no. And if you don't get enough reason to say yes, then you say no. So you're probably not going to fool them. Now, look, there's another point we want to make here. Our point here, and this will surprise you, is not that lying or ethical shading is bad. Okay, that's not the point we're making. Don't get us wrong. It is bad, okay? But that's not our point. Our point is it's stupid. It's ineffective. It's driven by a myth that is false because of a misunderstanding about interviewing as a system. That myth that we have of the black box causes us to justify laziness. And without preparation, we use as a crutch a little bit of cleverness, a little bit of playing the game to get what we want.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of you have been listening to Manager Tools for quite some time. You've heard some of our other interviewing guidance, what have you. And it might lead you to say something to the effect of, but wait, you guys said that the purpose of interviewing was to get the offer. Right? So now, am I not doing just that very thing? And folks, the answer to that would be yes, but all Manager Tools recommendations are inherently built on an ethical foundation. You cannot subvert our intent by eliminating our assumption of ethical behavior. In this case, folks, what I'm saying is the ends do not justify the means.
We start with ethics and everything else flows from there.
This year, skip the usual gifts. Give something that truly makes a difference. The tools to grow, lead, and succeed. A Manager Tools membership delivers actionable career guidance for every professional, regardless of what stage they are in their career. Learn more at manager-tools.com/memberships.
Okay, so now let's get to Horstmann's Wager. And we're going to build it for you. We recommend if you're not driving or doing something else, you draw a little picture. You could probably get away with doing the picture in your mind, but it might help you to actually physically do it. We're going to create a 2x2 matrix here, okay? And it's basically a box, a square four-sided box with two lines dividing it, one horizontally and one vertically. So now you have four boxes inside the larger big one box, okay? We're going to number the four inner squares as quadrants, numbers 1 through 4. 1 is in the top left, 2 is in the top right. 3 is in the bottom left. 4 is in the bottom right. Just like reading left to right, top to bottom.
Mm-hmm. And now we add to that 2x2 matrix, the dilemma and the outcomes. So the dilemma is going to go on the left axis vertically. The dilemma is simply either do I be myself or do I play the game? That is, do I stay truthful and prepare hard, or do I take the chance and hope that a little bit of puffery will get me what I want, which is obviously an offer? We'll put preparation on the top, aligned with quadrants 1 and 2, and playing the game on the bottom, aligned with quadrants 3 and 4.
Yeah. Now, folks, again, this is a classic 2x2. So you have the behaviors, the choices you can make on the left, then you have the outcomes across the top. There are two possible outcomes, obviously, offer and no offer. We make no intimations here regarding whether you accept the offer or not. That's a whole different kind of thing. Okay. We'll put offer, our goal, on the left above quadrants 1 and 3. And we'll put no offer on the right above quadrants 2 and 4.
Okay, so now we've got our 2x2 matrix drawn out. We've got the different options labeled on it. Now, let's take each of the 4 quadrants in the numbered order that we laid out earlier and talk about what happens in terms of the process and outcomes for each of those 4 options. And this is where we reveal our secret about interviewing.
Yeah, we have a lot of, I wish we had less secrets about interviewing because everybody knew them. So quadrant 1, that is the top left quadrant. The behavior is be yourself. In other words, prepare. And the outcome is get an offer. So this is the case where we've prepared, we've been ourselves. Obviously, preparation makes us our smart selves. We haven't played the game. We haven't shaded the truth in our favor in any way. We haven't tried to make ourselves look good at the expense of an honest person's good night's sleep. We haven't dodged a question. We have truths. We have prepared because if we're going to be honest, we know we're going to have to work hard in the job. So we might as well prove it by working hard in advance of getting the job.
Mm-hmm. And in Q1, we win. As opposed to, we don't get the offer, we get the offer. And this is the outcome we want. And we have done the right thing to get there, if you will. We were honest. This is what most interviewees think of as the ideal outcome. Although it's a bit misleading because there are really 2 ideal outcomes in terms of our interviewing matrix and 2 ineffective outcomes, but we will get to those. This is the one quadrant where most candidates think of as this is Mecca. This is I win everything.
Yeah, exactly. And again, this is where the dirty little secret of interviewing comes out. We say in our interviewing casts that the purpose of interviewing is to get an offer. That's all. Remember, not to take an offer, that happens later, but remember, taking an offer can only happen if you get an offer. But here's the thing, we can't divorce the interview from the process it's a part of, which is ultimately going to work somewhere. There is something more important than whether one gets an offer from a company. The offer slash no offer outcome here is only the short-term answer to the behavior we're talking about. The real value of interviewing behavior is the likelihood of good interviewing behavior producing a good long-term fit between you and the company that chooses to offer to you. So your goal shouldn't be for every company to offer you, unless you very carefully curated your companies and you know exactly what you're interviewing for and you're exceptionally well prepared. What should happen is there'll be sometimes when you are yourself and it's actually a good thing that you don't get an offer, but more on that in a minute.
And folks, as much as we don't like interviewing, it's still the best of all of the options. I mean, the only other way to determine whether or not someone could successfully do the job is hire them, and if they don't do it, fire them. So interviewing it's not ideal, but it's certainly the best option we've got. And so we've got to believe it provides some indication of long-term fit for the company. It's better than nothing, and it's what we have, so we have to believe in it and its success.
That we've said this before about interviewing. Churchill said it best about democracy. Democracy is the second worst form of government, and all the others are tied for last. Okay, so here's the core of our recommendation as it relates to Horseman's Wager. When you prepare and behave ethically, the result of your interview is not only accurate, it's more predictive of your fit and success with the interviewing organization.
And folks, the dirty little secret is that it's not just the offer that matters. It's what your behavior and the offer together suggest about the long-term fit that are the real key to interviewing success.
Yeah. Look, Q1, prepared, ethically prepared, and getting an offer is a big win. But most importantly, that offer has a high correlation to your longer-term success. More happiness in the job versus a burst of joy that you just won during the elimination/interviewing process. Okay? Yeah, you can get an offer if you behave unethically, but the question becomes, is it going to be a good fit for you?
Yes, exactly. And I mean, if you're going to go through all this work, folks, you don't want to accept a job that you're going to want to leave in 2 months.
Yeah, you know, can I mention something else
as an aside? Yeah, please.
It's not in the show notes, but I'm just going to share it. If you're one of those people that are listening to us and say, this is too much work, we're okay with that. Okay? You can go ahead and play the game. You can make yourself look better than you actually are. You can puff yourself up and all that kind of stuff. And you can get an offer maybe you don't deserve. But you must never, ever, if you do that even one time in your career, you must never, ever, in earshot of another professional, an ethical professional, ever complain about somebody trying to game the system with you in an interview. You can never complain about a candidate wanting to ask questions before you get through your questions, or a candidate saying, well, I don't really understand the question, or I don't want to answer that question, or, you know, let me explain why I don't think you've asked me the right question. All those behaviors are in the same basket that you engaged in when you shaded the truth and made yourself look better and puffed things up, all unethically. So karma is a you know what, and be very careful about saying, I'm not going to do it their way. I'm just going to go ahead and play the game, game the system, get what I want, and then move on, because other people will do it to you and you will find it exceptionally off-putting.
Exactly. Okay, so that was quadrant one. Now we're on to quadrant two, which again is in the top row on the right. It is be yourself and do not receive an offer. This is where we've behaved ethically, we have prepared, we have been ourselves in the interview, but that the company, the organization, the interviewers do not offer to us. We worked hard and unfortunately we failed.
Yeah, but did we really fail? I mean, sure, it's possible we didn't prepare well enough, but that's true of any situation you're ever going to be in. Everyone doesn't say to themselves, well, I might not win even if I do prepare, so why bother preparing at all? I mean, that's pretty nihilistic.
We wouldn't have sports
right there
if people did that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. that thought might be quite common in people who don't know how to prepare at all, and there are many people who don't know how to prepare, and if you want to know how to prepare, again, you can get our interviewing series.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Folks, many people would assume that not getting an offer is a bad outcome here. But if you've done a good job preparing and you deliver a good interview, if you get told no, it's then a very good sign that you probably wouldn't have fared well in this organization. I mean, the organization knows far better than you do what works and what doesn't, and they sense that you're not right for whatever reason for that role or for their organization. Maybe it's intangibles. Maybe it's a subtle fit with the actual hiring manager or boss themselves, or someone better skilled in certain places. Maybe you could do the job, but someone else could do the job better than you. If you would suggest that the firm should offer you in that situation, think about what that would mean, roles reversed. You're the interviewer, for example, and now you have to hire your fourth choice because they could theoretically do it. What's that going to do to your ability, if you're the interviewer here, to manage talent? Like, how does that pen you in? It makes no sense. It makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. The key learning here is if you look at your quadrant holistically at a high level, for both Q1 and Q2, which essentially is the top row based on preparation, while we only get an offer in one of those two quadrants, both quadrants suggest a more effective long-term solution. In other words, we get an offer from a company that we're prepared for and that we're interested in. By the way, we assume you're interested in the company. If you're not interested in the company, you should not be interviewing. So if we're interested and we're prepared and we get an offer, that should be a sign that that's probably a fit. Whereas if we're well prepared and we don't do well in the interview well enough to get an offer, that's a sign that you're probably not as good a fit.
Yeah. And I mean, going back to what I said earlier, do you want the job if the hiring manager knows you're probably going to wash out in a couple of months? No.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd rather keep interviewing and find a better spot to land instead of trying this out for 3 months and then having to do the interview candidacy rigmarole all over.
Yeah. And again, the top row, quadrants 1 and 2, that's where all the goodness happens in this 2x2 matrix. When we get to the second row, the bottom row, quadrants 3 and 4, things get really dark, really negative, very fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Which takes me then to quadrant 3. And quadrant 3, it's the left across the bottom, is where we play the game and we get an offer. Now we have the candidate playing the game, shading the truth, stretching the truth, being clever to look very good, making sure all the proper buzzwords are in place, and said candidate, untruthful. Candidate gets the offer.
And on the surface, that's good. That's what we want. The goal of an interview is to get an offer. But it's only on the surface. You've got the offer. But what's going to happen to you when you go to work there? You've been offered on the basis of a false premise that you are who you represent yourself to be. Folks, you're not going to be happy there. This does happen, and everyone knows it. Hiring managers saying to themselves, what happened to the guy I interviewed? I thought he was great. He turns out terrible. Well, that hiring manager was lied to. And in the long run, everyone loses. Even the people who hear the story about how you got an offer and then it didn't work out, that scares them about interviewing. And you probably, if you're willing to lie in the interview, you're probably willing to lie about how much preparation you did as well.
Mm-hmm. Lie at work every day too. Mark, this really, that paragraph, that idea itself really, really reminds me of when I initially interviewed for Manager Tools. And folks,
yes,
not all of you know this story. I'm sure you don't. Prior to my first in-person interview with Manager Tools, Mark said something to me along these lines, something like, if we hire you, we want you to be here for 20 years. We want you to retire from your job at Manager Tools. And if you don't want that, that's okay too. Let's be really good friends. Let's go have a nice meal and hang out. But if we're going to do this interview today, our intent is to hire you forever. And for me, the candidate in that moment, I saw no other option than to tell the full, unvarnished truth. Because I thought to myself in that moment, I'm going to be here for 20 years. I mean, if I'm going to put on a better face than exists, I can't keep it up for the next 20 years. Like, I just can't. I don't have it in me, honestly. And I'm sure some of the unvarnished truths that I told you, Mark, I mean, you'd be the judge of it, made me look less than ideal.
Oh, actually, that's the mistake that people make, right? We asked you very tough questions, and you made some questionable career choices early in your career, and you were absolutely crystal clear about it, about what you did, why you did it in detail, the good rationales and the bad ones, and you admitted in hindsight the mistakes you made and so on. Well, to me, this is a perfect example of a prepared and ethical candidate, but more importantly, not afraid to say things that will make them look bad. The whole point of ethics, it's like the point of etiquette. The question of etiquette is, do you use it when no one's looking? The point of ethics is, are you willing to be truthful? Are you willing to be honest even when it hurts you? It's easy to be honest when it makes you look good, but it's hard to be honest when you don't look good. And in fact, as I recall, it was like a 7-hour interview.
Yes, it was. 7 hours.
And we had already made the decision. And I think the interview was largely just the one question, tell me about yourself.
It was the first 7 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we made the decision to hire you based on that one question, because you were so honest about things. And you had since been very successful, but I didn't even care. I was like, no, this is the person I want. They're willing to be honest even when it's uncomfortable. And even when it's, to everybody else's perception, against the rules of the game. But you were not playing the game. And I don't like game players, never have. And recruiters don't like game players either. So you played it exactly right. You said, hey, look, I'm going to prepare. I'm going to be myself. And if they don't offer, then myself isn't right for the job.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It was myself that I had to maintain for the next 20 years. The intent here is fit, not winning, not getting the offer. It's if I get the offer, will I fit in well with this organization? And essentially, we're revealing here the danger of that black box mentality. The short-sightedness of it, it drives behavior that is wrong on so many levels, ethically, professionally, systematically. There is short-term positives that are celebrated and long-term negatives that are often missed, never correlated, and much more important to the entire system.
Yep. I couldn't have said it better myself. That gets us now to quadrant four. Now we're in the bottom right. So we're still in the bottom level. We're playing the game. But in this case, we don't get an offer. Okay. This to me is the crowning jewel of Horseman's Wager, the 2x2 matrix. It's the ultimate like double whammy. Okay. Not only did you not get what you came from, an offer, you have to wonder. This is just a deadly serious question. What would have happened if I had done my preparation? Would they have offered me if I had simply been myself?
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to let that hang there for a minute. Because, folks, the tears before were much smaller than the tears after this question hits your mind, when the shock sets in that they didn't say no to you. They said no to that little cardboard cutout you held up in front of yourself. It's like dressing one way for a date and being told no for a second date. And then a week later, seeing that individual, that young man or lady you had interest in with someone else dressed exactly like you would have dressed if you had been your smart self, not your slick self, your honest self, truly who you are. And now you weren't you. And they said no to not you. And now you have to live with that. Would they have said yes to real me? Maybe. Maybe they would have.
Yeah. Look, it's really simple, folks. You can play the game, but both outcomes of the game are bad. You get an offer from a company that you may not be aligned with. And by the way, your career will suffer, and that will make future interviews harder. Or you cannot get an offer and spend the rest of your life wondering what would have happened if I had just been honest. Or you could do the preparation. And you'll either get an offer because you deserve it and you're a good fit, or you won't get an offer, meaning you're probably not a fit. It seems to us really, really simple. If you think long-term, the best outcomes from interviews come from real preparation, not performance. You're not on stage, okay? The worst ones happen when you start playing the game instead of playing it straight.
Yeah. And to your point, Mark, you just said it. Interviews aren't a stage. They're a signal. And over time, signals always beat trickery.
Don't try to be the slick version of yourself. Slick fades fast. Be your smart self, the one who's done the work, knows the story, understands the room, and shows up with confidence instead of choreography.
Because when you do that, and you don't get the job, you build the kind of reputation that gets you the next one and the next one after that. All right. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for the wager.
Thank you, Sarah. That was fun.
It was good. It was really good. Thanks, folks. We hope this helped you. Now help us, help others, and tell your friends. And of course, follow, rate, and review our podcast. And remember, 5 stars only, please. Bye, everyone.